You're listening to the Shift Work Podcast, episode 89. If you have ever heard or said, we need to slow down to speed up, today's episode is all about the tactics and what you may be doing to block the actual progress that you desire. We talk today about cognitive fatigue, and I give you 4 steps and actions that you can take to be able to actually slow down and get the output that you desire. So stay tuned. Hi, I'm Luke Lehman, and you're listening to the only podcast for high-growth entrepreneurs rooted in business strategy and tactics as we discover the habits of high-performance leaders and dive deep into brain science. With over 2 decades leading high-performance teams, from fighter pilot to CEO, I'm excited to join you in your entrepreneurial journey. Shift the mindset needed to build your empire, keep more money in your pocket, and enjoy every day of the journey. Welcome to Shift Work. Hey, my friends, welcome back to another episode of the Shift Work Podcast. Today is an important episode, really, in the place in the year that we're in right now. I would say the place of the decade that we're in right now, perhaps the place in your life that you're in right now. And we're talking about today this concept of slowing down as a prerequisite of speeding up. And this conversation on the heels of a seminar that I did last week, where I was discussing with the leaders inside the organization about the gap that was being created between their growth and the level of performance of the team that they had available to them. And as we discussed it, the concept of we need to slow down to speed up continued to come up. But what I found was missing was the methodology necessary to actually slow down. And I'm going to share some insights with you today about what may be happening for you as a leader that's blocking the success of the organization, whether that's profitability, whether that's timeliness, whether that's growth, whether that's employee satisfaction, or however you measure the success of your team. There's likely something that's happening inside you that we need to look at. And we'll dive into that here in just a few minutes. But before we do, I want to describe for you how this delta gets created in your own leadership, in your life, in your business, the difference between what's available and what's needed. And it's hard for you to imagine because I'm using my hands to describe, and I know you're listening to this, but if you can imagine the top, like the top of a cup, the amount of available area to be filled in, and then just below that, there is an amount of fluid in the cup. The cup is filled with half or 3/4 of the cup. And what's different, what's the delta, is the amount of the available space. So above the fluid of the amount of space that can be filled in. And if you were operating at 100% capacity, the cup would be filled to its brim. Now, you and I both know that operating at 100% capacity is near impossible. We can't optimize the amount of work to be done and the amount of labor to do it so perfectly that we spend every single one of our labor dollars on the exact right amount of work. But here's the real problem, is that we keep changing the cup size. So if you imagine the top of the growth, you look at the opportunities facing the company, and we're continuing to move this top line up. We're changing the amount of work that needs to be done. Yet oftentimes we find that the available workforce stays constant, or we're trying to hire, or we're trying to train, or we're losing people, and this divide continues to be created. This delta exists, the difference between what's available and what's needed. But the problem in a high growth organization or a high growth team is that the more that you grow, the more that you create a bigger divide for yourself. And you find yourself constantly chasing this problem to close the divide. You do it with more team members. You try to hire aggressively. And as you do that, you begin to catch up. But what happens when you outpace your ability to execute? What happens when the sales machine turns on and you begin to grow and you outpace what's available? And that's where this divide begins to become quite exacerbated. And when leaders see this, they realize it, they acknowledge it, and they say things like, we need to slow down to speed up. Perhaps you've heard that before. Perhaps you've even said that before, or perhaps you're even experiencing that in your own life. But I want you to think back to a time that you may have said it or you may have heard it. And I want you to think about the specific actions that actually happened. after we said that we were going to slow down to speed up, how did we do that? Did we take a methodical approach to actually slow down to remove things from our list of items to do? Did we take away the barriers? Did we actually slow down, or did we just reallocate work share to a small portion of the high performers that we knew were capable of doing it? Because if that's the case, if we actually took this same amount of work and reallocated it to less people, sure, the bottom line might have been affected. We might have been able to make more money on the project that we were working on. But realistically, we're going to burn out the people that we're asking to do the work. And when they get burned out, when they become jaded, when they become frustrated, when they decide that they're going to leave or take a break or whatever they're going to do, they create a bigger divide. They create the separation that you were trying to solve in the first place. So if you don't actually take the opportunity to slow down, you're actually removing and diminishing the capacity to do the work in the first place. And when you lose more teammates, that's like taking half of the Clydesdales off the Budweiser wagon and still asking them to do the same amount of work. So what does it look like for you to actually be able to slow down? What does it take for you to actually accept the risks that will happen when you slow down? And I'm reminded of a flying story called the Rolex. Now, let me paint the picture for you. When I was doing my mission commander upgrade sortie, we were participating in an exercise called Red Flag. Now, Red Flag happens in Las Vegas. It's an awesome place to fly airplanes because it's an enormous amount of airspace, open desert. It's always hot. The engines always do great. We're in a great place to engage in aerial combat. For my mission commander upgrade, there was going to be about 70 airplanes that were going to participate in this aerial attack mission. Some of them had the opportunity or the mission assigned to them to do dogfighting. They were going to do 1v1 air-to-air, or they were going to try to do a sweep, offensive counter-air. They were going to try to do long-range missile attacks to take the aerial adversaries. Some of the other airplanes had the responsibility to do air-to-ground attack. There were command and control airplanes that were assigned. There were suppression of enemy air defenses. And together, this attack package was going to move forward to do the mission. Now, if you can imagine this, the whole concept was that all the airplanes hit the line of advance at the same time. So one arbitrary line that we set forth, usually prescribed by a latitude or longitude. And we said, once you hit that line on time, then everybody's going to push forward at the same time. So as we set that up, the way that we do it is we go put ourselves in different holds. We have 5-10 miles from that specific line, and we separate ourselves via altitude, and everybody inside their formation. So of those 70 airplanes, we're divided into 4 ships, 2 ships, sometimes larger, 8 airplanes, perhaps, each with a lead. And that lead was then responsible for getting to that line of advance, that push line on time. Well, here's the challenge. When something goes wrong, when someone's late, when the tanker's not available, when the command and control node is not in place, when we don't have the complete air picture or the laydown that we expect, we have a tendency to want to slow down, to speed up. And here's the common error that people would make. Because we're limited by fuel, everyone knows that this fight is only really going to last 20 or 25 minutes because we're limited by the fuel available for the common fighter, which is usually the F-16, which has the least gas available. And when the F-16 bingos out, the whole thing begins to kind of end. So the common mistake is when we're cognizant of the limitations, a new mission commander might say Rolex 2 minutes. And what that means is everybody's going to set their timer back 2 minutes. But just imagine yourself in the cockpit with me just for a moment. If I have to go into my control system and reset that time on target, it's going to take 10 or 15 seconds, maybe 30 seconds to get into the menu to be able to set that up. And then I have to readjust myself in a position of time and space to be able to make the push on time. When we reset and when we Rolex 2 minutes, what often happens is people would get behind as they tried to re-maneuver their formation. And this slowing down, this go ugly early concept was, instead of trying to Rolex only 2 minutes, if we gave ourselves 4 minutes or 6 minutes to be able to reset and to truly be ready, then everyone would be in position with the information that they needed, and they would begin on time and in position. They would hit the attack formation, that line of advance together. Now, can you imagine the difference in a full attack force going forward, 70 airplanes, line abreast, all with the right information, all on time, and ready to accomplish what they were set out to do, with only 18 minutes remaining or 20 minutes remaining, as compared to having 22 minutes remaining, but everyone going in disarray? They enter at different times or altitudes or positions with oftentimes not having enough of the information available. The difference in slowing down to speed up is that we accept that there may not be as much opportunity for us in the short term, but the long-term gain is going to far exceed whatever we might lose in the short term. So my question for you is, what's causing you to say that you need to slow down? What was the driving factor that led you to believe that your team wasn't performing well, that the delta, that the divide between what needed to get done and what available resources you had was causing you to need to slow down? Usually one of the first signs as leaders that we need to slow down is when we begin to see errors happening. And we're going to talk about cognitive fatigue in just a second. But when these errors begin to show up in the organization, we could call them unforced errors if we were looking to sports analogies. These unforced errors happen because we begin to lose focus on process. We begin to lose our collective energy and we stop working together as a team. And oftentimes the characteristics of the behaviors look like heroics. You see team members that are trying to act autonomously and in good faith, but they're making mistakes that would likely be attributed to an unforced error. So when you see that in your organization and you see the need to slow down, I want to first look at you and let's analyze what's real. You see, oftentimes we project upon others the things that we are most afraid of. So when you begin to get stressed, when you begin to feel uncomfortable, when you begin to have unforced errors, is when you might find yourself saying, we need to slow down to speed up. So I want you to be critical now and ask the question, is it really the entire team that needs to slow down? Or is it you that needs to slow down? And is it a matter of needing to slow down? Or is it a matter of needing better focus? Perhaps what we really need is a small recalibration of the level of efforts that we have, or we need to reallocate a specific amount of work share to someone else? Or is it a matter of needing to slow down? Or perhaps is it a matter of needing better leadership? You see, what happens in the heroics inside our own life is that when we begin to feel the stress, when we begin to feel the turmoil, the chaos surrounding us, we know as high performers that we can just fix it through powering through hard work. If I can just put in more hours in the day, then I'll just get it done. And then perhaps I go and rely on a few of those high performers, my stalwarts, the old faithful that I can go back and say, well, I'm just going to ask you to put in a little extra effort. Hey, I need you to sprint for just a little bit. I need you to carry the load inside the organization for just a little bit longer. And how sustainable is that? My question for you when you're thinking about whether or not you need to slow down is, if you were to look to an industry leader in your sector, would they also think it's time to slow down? Would you look at me, and if I was familiar with your business, would I say it's time to slow down? Or would we say that it's time to be doubling down? You see, when the divide gets created, sure, we can all pick up the heroics and we can all put in the extra effort and we can all work a little bit harder, a little bit faster, a little bit better. But those little bit changes aren't going to make the level of impact that we need to have inside the team or inside our organization. And what's the real cost of a wrong decision? How do you know whether you should be slowing down or doubling down? And if you get that wrong, what's the cost? You might run everybody into the ground inside your team, but you also might get outstripped by your competitors who don't slow down, who have built the systems and the processes and the frameworks to be able to accelerate through it, or perhaps they just have the energy right now to be able to really sprint. So my question for you is this: is it really the team that needs to slow down, or is it you that needs to slow down? There's this really important discussion around cognitive fatigue, and there's some just phenomenal studies about what happens when we get into this cognitive fatigue. And I wrote about it in a very similar context in Building Resilience about the effect of acute and chronic stress, which is localized, not to mean small for acute, but localized stress. It could be very profound, and chronic stress of something that happens over a very long time. But when I look at cognitive fatigue, the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine in 2019 published a study that found that cognitive fatigue significantly impairs job performance. And here's one of the key findings. Employees experiencing cognitive fatigue were 2.3 times more likely to make errors at work. So when you begin to look and see that those unforced errors are happening, one of the first places that you need to look is cognitive fatigue. Literally, at the end of a 10-hour workday, you're 2.3 times more likely to make those unforced errors. So when you load up those team members, or when you load up yourself and say that you're going to do it, you're going to make more mistakes. So we're going to talk a little bit about how you can actually slow down, but I want you to get curious. Is it really a slowdown that you need? Or do you really just need more focus? Or do you really just need more time for creativity? Or do you really just need more help from those surrounding you? And when you can get quiet and you can get curious and you can begin to find the answer that you already know, maybe it's not actually your team that's underperforming. Maybe it's just your projection. So what is it that you're afraid of? Are you seeing those unforced errors and you think that projects are going to not be finished on time, that you're going to miss deadlines, that you're going to lose clients? Because when it comes back down to it, we all have human fears, and they're all very similar. And we go through this cycle of leaders of will it work and will it last and will it work and will it last. And we think that we're in this boom cycle right now, but because we're in a boom cycle, that it's got to end. And we get in this scarcity mindset and we become fearful of what's going to happen. And we put the brakes on. We say we got to slow down to speed up. And this little colloquialism has become commonplace, but why is it that we need to slow down? I just gave you the analogy. I gave you the anecdote of the reason why you want to slow down. I showed you the example of hitting the line of advance, and there are real reasons to slow down. I'm just asking you whether or not in your own life that the thing that you've assessed as the reason to slow down is actually a real reason to slow down. Sometimes there's also just a real reason to push the advance, to just go harder and to double down instead of slowing down. If I find out that there's a massive threat or a massive opportunity, instead of waiting for all the information, I'm actually just going to push the throttles up and say, go, everybody go now. We'll figure it out. We'll sort it out at the end of it. So when you get curious about whether or not you need to slow down or double down, let's figure out a tactical way for you to be able to do this. And the very first thing, the mistake that leaders make is that they expect the same level of output. you cannot get out of the organization the same things that you were having yesterday if you're also going to slow down. There's an image that comes to mind from a book called The Wisdom of Teams by Katzenbach and Smith. And in this image, it has the x-axis as team effectiveness and the y-axis as performance impact. And what it talks about is that the lowest level of team effectiveness, when you put together a working group, is that we have moderate performance impact because we can work together on tasks. But as the team builds, as team effectiveness increases and we begin to get into this team dynamic, our performance impact actually goes down for a short period. And the good news is that on the backside of that is the team comes together and we get into a high-performing team. Now we get into the accretive approach of the teaming effort. We find that when the team comes cohesively around a shared mission or purpose, common expectations, goals, and outcomes, we can find that the performance output increases. But in the short term, you're actually going to get less productivity. So the first component that you need to understand as a leader is that when you say that you're going to slow down to speed up, is that you actually need to make provisions for what less output that you're going to accept. What specifically are you willing to accept a delay on? What can get put on the back burner? Perhaps a strategic initiative maybe isn't going to take priority this quarter because you're going to focus on what needs to get accomplished right now. And the second step when we're talking about teaming is to build your team and to look for accretive capacities. One of the most important things that you can do is to encourage active recovery periods. If I just talked to you about cognitive fatigue and I told you that when you were experiencing cognitive fatigue, you were 2.3 times more likely to make errors at work. Well, it's true of everyone else on our team as well. So when we say that we're going to slow down, is I'm going to input forced brain breaks into the team. I know that we're actually taking the time to recharge and to refresh. And now's the time that I'm going to be talking about what your diet is. Now's the time that I'm going to be talking about what your sleep patterns are. Now I'm going to be talking about your exercise patterns. And I'm going to be encouraging that in my team because I know that these active recovery periods are going to be my opportunity to build a more cohesive team. So what is it that you're actually going to do when you accept less output and you focus on building a team? The third component is to focus on quality over quantity. And I know that's easier said than done, but what often happens is that we don't actually slow down as leaders to figure out what quality you actually want. Which quality do you want to focus on? Which KPIs, which OKRs, which deliverables and outputs? Which quality metrics are you actually going to focus on? And have you communicated that with your team that says, I want to make sure that we're putting out error-free work. I want to make sure that we're going to focus on doing no rework. Because doing it again and again and again to get it right is much more impactful, much more detrimental than having just slowed down to do it right in the first time. So if you believe that there is an almost 3 times chance of greater error, the slowing down and focusing on quality is where you get the higher return on investment. And here's the final point. When you communicate with your team, you need to be able to connect them to a straight line from their action all the way to the corporate goals, all the way to the end state, all the way to the outcome. And there's lots of things that we do along the way, but if they can't connect a straight line from what they're doing to the overall strategic mission of the company, you're not focusing on the correct things. So when you slow down and you say, why is it that you're doing what you're doing? What is the direct impact of the action that you're taking today that's going to have a positive effect on the overall company outcome? And here's the kicker. It can be no more clear to anyone else than it is to you. And I see leaders make this mistake all the time as they make the mistake of assumption. They think that everybody else knows what's going on, that as it's been sorted out in your own head, that you have included it on a couple of memos or bulletins, that you've put it out at a staff meeting. You have perhaps sent an email with your directive. But I see it time and time and time and time again. When I slow down and I take the opportunity to just simply ask, what's your priority? What are you working on? What's your focus? That oftentimes what I find is that subordinates and leaders alike lack the clarity. They don't know what the correct focus is. So really, when we slow down, much of what we're slowing down is to make sure that everyone knows the direction that we're going to, that the pull direction becomes so magnetic that everyone is moving in the same direction. And when everyone is rowing in sequence and in stride, the outcomes now can become accretive. So my question for you now as we close this episode is, where can you accept less output? And if you're saying that you will slow down to speed up, where are you actually going to focus on? And give yourself some grace in this. When you slow down, give yourself the opportunity for the act of recovery. Give yourself the opportunity to rest. Give yourself the opportunity to set priorities. Give yourself the opportunity to focus on your family and your friends and your values. When we're playing the infinite game, when we're playing the long game, we realize that we can take a loss in the first quarter because we're going to be still standing in the second and the third and the fourth, and we're going to be ready to play that infinite game. I hope you have a great week, my friends, and I'll see you right back here next week for another episode of the Shift Work Podcast.
Thanks for listening. If you found value in today's episode, please take the time to leave a review so that we can build our community of high-growth entrepreneurs. If you'd like to stay connected with me, go to www.lukelehman.com to find a link to your social media channel of choice.